Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Rebecca.
It's nice to see you. Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month. Happy June.
It's June. Happy mixed messaging from corporations that don't always support and being reminded which ones do, and also playing the game of COVID chicken with how we interact with the people. So Yeah, happy Pride. It's just Pride Month. It's super chill. It's 2021. It's super chill. Like, instead of doing the weather and what's going on, because, you know, whatever, may I ask you if you remember the first Pride event you ever attended?
Yeah, well, I definitely went to, like, a small town Pride event in college, which I don't even think was in June because I wouldn't have been there in the summer, so it must have been in September or October, but my first, what I consider my first real Pride is my first DC Pride, which you and I attended together because we were living together. And I just remember we had about 5 or 6 people staying in our apartment besides the 3 of us who already lived there. 4 of us, because it was that summer, who already lived there.
Oh, it was that summer.
Yeah. And I just remember, like, feeling so happy to have, like, our friends come in from out of town and to get to not only show them DC, but to experience, like, a big city pride together. And I got miserably sick and stranded on the metro. I do remember that too, but, you know, still holding on to the feelings of community and especially, like, the love within my own, like, chosen families that I always feel at this time of year. So that's Pride for me. Do you have, like, a first Pride memory?
Yeah, I like, the first, like, super queer surrounding thing I was at was definitely not Pride. Talk to me in person. I'm not putting this in a recording, but my first date slash meeting with a woman, the first woman I would be with, I was really worried that I was going to get outed sitting across from her, neglecting to realize that the Sweet 16 was being played in New Orleans around me, which, if you don't know, lesbians and college women's basketball are basically, like, synonymous, even in the early aughts. So there was no chance of, like, anybody really caring if I was queer. And in hindsight, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that was the first, like, community gathering, I guess, I was out at. But my first, like, big Pride event was in Dallas, Texas. There was, like, some chosen family and a person I was seeing, and we would drive the 3+ hours at that time to get to a Pride event because we just wanted to be really tiny fish in a bigger pond for a day. Yeah, and Dallas has a really ridiculously rich queer history. I think it gets erased a lot because it's in Texas, but Dallas has a lot going for it. At that time, I even believe the sheriff was openly queer. So this would have been, like, 2007, maybe. So, yeah. The last Pride I went to was with you and Ruth Elizabeth and two other individuals who have not given us permission to use their names, so I won't. But it was that random dance party one that was on the wharf.
Oh, my God. You're right. That was so fun.
Yeah, and the DJ was definitely, like, playing basically everything I would dance with you guys with when you were in college. So it was a lot of, you know, Robin and Marina and things like that. So it was, you know, it was the same day or the other day as the parade, but it was more like a block party. So I really dug that.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, to be a grown up, quote unquote, because I really don't go to the parade here in DC, anymore. I go to some of the sort of ancillary events that take place throughout the month and throughout that weekend. And you know, it's just interesting, like, how our relationships to Pride have changed as we've matured, as we've sort of, like, found ourselves within our different queer communities. And I'm kind of a sucker for this time of year because I love seeing so much from the queer community. I feel like there's a lot of great writing that comes out at this time, a lot of great content. You know, it's, like, the one time of year that queer content creators should, in theory, be getting paid and, like, be getting these big deal you know, getting the attention they deserve. And, you know, there's levels to it, because there's that. And then there's also the very real conversation that happens every year about capitalism and the fact that Pride has become more and more corporate and more overtaken by big corporations. And,
you know. Yeah, I think it's really important that, you know, as a queer white person with a certain amount of privilege bestowed to me because of my race before it's taken away from me because of my orientation and my identity, to like really, really take a moment and remember that none of this would have happened without trans women of color who started, you know, started the spark, as it was said, you know, the hairpin heard around the world with the drop and things like that. So yeah, I think it's really important, for me to be like very conscious of my queer dollar right now. For me, that means buying more literature. Let's just be honest. I am definitely guilty of Pride paraphernalia myself. I'm going to a queer Pride night at a local minor league baseball game later this week. I will probably get the hat because, you know, every once in a while I lean in. But, you know, I think it's a really mixed bag, because I think Pride for me is similar to New Year's for some people. I get really excited, and the closer it gets, the more I find myself like kind of pulling back and reflecting on what I want the next year to be as my queer experience, what my responsibility is within it. So for me, it's like my big gay New Year. It's like, what have I done? What do I want to do? How would I like my body to be going forward? And for me, by body, I mean emotional stability, and kind of go from there. So yeah, you know, buy a queer book, buy a queer author, and preferably through a queer publisher. And independent authors are their own publishers, so if you want to hit 2-for-1, I highly implore you to get an independent author's book. We have tons of recs. Don't hesitate to reach out to us. And we're going to drop a whole bunch more, I'm sure, in this conversation.
Yeah.
Caitlin, before we jump in, I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but I know that even, like, right before we finally sat across from each other and had that conversation about like, hey, is there something here? It started with like 1 and 2 a.m. text messages about a particular series of books. I'll let you choose if you want to say what they are, with you jumping book from book one night after the next, and just kind of seeing awkward versions of our community on the page on like multiple books in a, let's just be honest, a series. Like, it's titled, people know, the media's been out. I don't know why I always wait. But we're talking about series today. So can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, so when we say that we are talking about, you know, the quintessential lesfic series, we're talking about a number of books that exist within the same universe, have the same characters, and especially in lesfic and romance novels that we've been reading, it tends to circle around one friend group, family, or work environment. And each member of the friend group or, you know, group, book by book, has their own romance. And there are just a ton of these, and it's kind of amazing. I was thinking about, there are authors who really specialize in these and who create series after series for us. And it's something really special. And I think something that's really like unique about romance in a way that's different from like other contemporary literature right now.
Yeah, my like foot in the door was series, and it was very, you know, like, I mean, like my first deep dive was definitely in series. I definitely went through the first 7, 6 of the Honor series by Radcliffe. You know, I'd be remiss to like not be forthright and say that, you know, I consumed a lot of Melissa Braden's books right off the bat. I did the same with Georgia Beers. You know, you kind of go through that initial, like when you go places that people most talked about.
Yeah.
And indirectly, as like you hit those forums and those chat rooms and things like that, I was able to learn about a lot of other authors whose work I was really able to saturate in for a while with their series instead of just the standalones, to to kind of get a feel for their voice and find myself, you know, giving myself permission to get lost in their narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was almost overwhelming when I first got into lesbic. Like, thank God I had you, because I've talked about before how hard it was for me to initially find lesbian romance novels, because I just couldn't, it wasn't clicking. Like, it just wasn't, I couldn't find any. And what happened was I found a Melissa Braden series. And at first I was so intimidated because I couldn't tell what order they, you know, you have to do a little bit of, you have to figure out what order they go in, and you have to figure, you know, all of that stuff. But it was a really great way to dive into this genre and to really learn about like what romance could be and like what these books could be. So Rebecca, let's just go ahead and get in. What do you want in a series?
Selfishly, at this point, I really like the new kid in town, the new woman in town, the new gender non-binary person in town, because in a series, everything that happens, like the town itself, the community we're introduced to, the eventual romantic interest or the murder plot, if it's a mystery or things like that, when there's a new character to the space, that character, while a very smart writing device for this reason alone, allows me to not feel naive when questions are asked or answers are needed, because that person needs to obtain that information so that they can enter the space. So in book one, I want somebody who's just a little bit lost like I am. I love that. And what I need to like be hooked on the series is I need to care about somebody other than the MC and the MC's love interest.
Yeah.
If those things happen, I'm usually hook, line, and sinker. That's just like, yes, give me the next book.
Yeah.
What are you looking for when you start these? I know that series were really your bread and butter in the beginning.
They really were. And I'm getting back into them this summer. I think there's something about the summer that makes it a good time to read a series. No, I agree with everything you just said. I want especially the growth of the main characters to continue from book one through the rest of the books. So I love getting to see the characters grow and change even when they're not the focus of the book. So like, you know, in almost all of these, you know, I'm thinking of Fiona Riley's Perfect Match series. We have in book one, we have the matchmaker meeting her match. And then in book two, you see the power couple sort of on the periphery as this other relationship, these other characters get to thrive. And then in book three, they're getting married and you get to see the relationship and the growth that those main characters have continue. So it's not a happily ever after. It's still like very grounded in reality. And we don't need, you know, that epilogue to make sure that we know that the characters are happy. We get to see how it ties into the rest of their world.
Yeah, completely. A happily for now works for me on a different level in a series than it does in others. To be, we'll get into it when we get into one kicks us out. The epilogue sometimes leads to that for me, and I'll elaborate more. So you guys just have to listen a few more minutes. Okay, to be continued. I'm with you. I've been thinking a lot about like what my evolution of reading a series or what I look for now. In the beginning, I only thought about series as the same author telling the same character stories. What that's evolved into is, as I've had time to read more novels, is kind of figuring out, help me, because I know that this is fan fiction, like real canon language, and I'm going to mess it up.
Okay.
When characters live within the same world, but they're like in standalones. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by this is there's authors who will, you know, like the grocery list, you'll come across other characters they've written because in the greater sense, they're all sharing the community together, even though they're not in the same books that you would like read in a certain sequential order.
Yeah. I mean, again, Fiona Riley is a great example of that, where you have, you know, every one of her books, there's like, she's on a farm and she sees an ad on TV for the matchmaker, or the restaurant that one of the characters opens is named as a favorite food place for a character in a totally different book. So yeah, it's the authors building the universe of their books, and everyone is existing within the same universe.
Yeah. And then also this past year, I was introduced to the idea of multiple authors telling the same narrative in a structure. There was the Flippin Fantastic Renovation series, which has Lucy Bexley, Bryce Oakley, and Stephanie Shea, and they each wrote one of the three books with the characters intertwined. So not only did you get to follow more characters, you got the unique voice of those characters because it was a shared series narrative with three different writing styles introducing. So yeah, I'm really into that. We both know I read a lot outside of romance. In the more elaborate series, like of erotica, what you get, like since you already build erotica with romance last and like interaction first, is you get a lot of world building of sex positive safe spaces and how to navigate that. Now, if you want to take that idea and completely throw it on its head and like introduce faith and myth, like at an exponential level, TJ Dallas's Pride series is just, one day in a distant future, we will talk about this, I'm sure, but TJ's mind and how it works, I just have no idea. I just none whatsoever. So like within those series, I'm just reading to like figure out which mythological badass is showing up next on top of everything else that's happening. Then you have people like Eliza Linsky, who writes the Don't Call Me Hero, and it really takes the series, book five just dropped, I'm actually in the middle of reading that right now, to like unpack the characters' inner dialogues a little bit more when it's a series focusing on only two characters and not kind of compounding on the other community. Mm-hmm. The author has this opportunity to like slowly introduce us to what makes a character tick, and that's just deliciously delightful in its own way. So yeah, and then, you know, just give me these freaking queer communities all day. Like, I'm really here for just chosen family and community at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And a series grants me that at a level that I cannot put into words what it does for me internally, besides brings me all the feels, all the joy. So
yeah. I mean, I think there's something about the series. Basically every series that we've brought up so far has been built around like a chosen family, and that does feel so, I mean, that is queerness. Queerness is so much of chosen family and the support and the importance of those relationships, even outside of or alongside your romantic ones.
Speaking of like queer communities and where you yeah. are within this, you and I on paper would be very different people than what a lot of these characters sometimes show. Uh-huh. So like I selfishly kind of look for the two of us on the page to be like, hey, let's read about each other. But there is some kind of comfort that happens in this chosen family, in this space of inclusion. What I want to ask a two-part question. One, within the communities in a series, what draws you in? And two, spilling the tea for Pride, what kicks you out?
Yeah. What draws me in? I think for me, what draws me in is I like to explore and see the friendships as the novels progress. So I've had some issues with some series where they're like childhood best friends and we're just expected to kind of like understand that they love each other and know each other, but we haven't gotten to see their friendship build. It's kind of taken for granted. So I think I love the dual nature of a series because in some ways the chosen family, the queer community is more important or just as important to the romance. I love that character. I love when the characters dissect each other. Like, for example, I'm thinking of a series where the main character in book one was like an ice queen. And in book two, you get to see the new main character sort of like unpack, like, what is it like to be friends with an ice queen and to see her fall for somebody and to see, like, you get to see the romance from an outsider's perspective too, which is so just an interesting exercise. I'm going to ask you, what draws you in? And then we can compare after that, what kicks us out?
I've been working from home for a year. To piggyback off of what you were saying, No, I feel very similar. I'm very intrigued by like the messiness of the human experience and the ability to be like a flawed creature who continues to thrive and to grow and to ingest new information and change your mind and apply it in a way that allows you to be a better citizen of the world. And I think series like you were saying with, you know, what happens with the Ice Queen character who's brushed off as a certain energy is then shared back to us, not only falling in love, but just the perspective of the people who care about her around her, besides the other character trying to fall in love with her, or, you know, in the act of getting to know her. So I think that there's this amazing ability to see yourself as something besides a being that needs to be romantically loved in a series. And for a queer experience, that's incredibly rich to me. It's not an experience I get very much in media or on TV. So often our narrative is camp or trauma. So the idea of the mundane is really, really empowering to me. And in series, we get a lot of the mundane. And I'm so incredibly thankful for the mundane.
Well, you go first. What kicks you out?
And then I guess as the bully who's mundane, the thing that kicks me out, I will use epilogues as a good example. This is nothing against authors. I don't do what you do. I understand it's very hard. I get to like just enjoy it. But when an epilogue is put into a book, which usually takes place X number of time after we finish the final interaction, when there's a series, the series needs to pick up at that timeline or be very careful when it backtracks, because so often I've seen things in epilogues that completely contradict an action that happens later or leads to a judgment really severely about characters whose narratives we haven't seen yet. It's unfortunate, but it happens. Another thing is just, you know, you can authors have a lot to do besides just be authors. So books don't come out at the same interval as the characters are interacting with each other if we're talking about like modern contemporary literature. So, for example, with the Honor series, there is a disjointment because, spoiler alert, everybody stop now if you haven't read this and you want to. This is a big plot point. There is a New York narrative involving a specific date that is very ingrained in American history. I'll let you fill in what it is, involving buildings. You know, I'm not going to go too much into that. Watching technology in that book going forward doesn't always add up to like what was actually available on the market for the layman, let alone probably for Congress and senators and such like that. So like it's very easy when you read those books to get kicked out in the later ones because like they just didn't go at the same speed that the technology went. And that technology is like we forget when it was built. I buy my actual like degree in life, my undergraduate degree. I'm a person who focuses on continuity of story. So it's unfair of me to like not recognize that within myself, but I am the person who physically would like go and look up what a pound of butter or a loaf of bread costs for a writing assignment I was on and try to keep that consistent. So that's where I get kicked out. Like the timelines are vital to me, and if I miss the timeline, that means I was just really entrenched in the work, and I love that experience. But I think with a series, you have to be very careful because your audience is paying much more attention to everything because they're trying to pick up on clues or on experiences or tie things back for the next story. So if you're going to write that way, I think there is a like a certain parameter of rules you have to have in place. And if you're not a person who's good at staying in those parameters, there's a chance that you might trip over your own words and the characters can feel disjointed from narrative to narrative if you don't kind of hold them accountable to the same timeline at the same time. I'm thinking of a series we recently read in the last year where the second book like really kind of kicked us both out really significantly. And we were excited to read book three. But book two made no sense. Book one and three felt like the same world, and book two just felt like hitting a deadline. And that's nothing against the world of these books, but you know, it just didn't work. Like it didn't make for a cohesive narrative. What kicks you out?
I have such a long list. For all that I love series, I think it's really easy to kick me out of them. So one thing that I don't love is when I can tell exactly by the end of the first book, I don't want to know where and what the second and third and fourth and, you know, I don't want to know what those books are going to be. And you can give me a little spoil, you can give me a little hint, but I don't want to know, like, right off, like, halfway through book one, that book two is going to be this friend and that friend, or this friend and that bartender. Like, I want there to still be the element of surprise that comes from reading a new work of literature. And I understand that so often the, you know, you sell the series based on the bundle of all of the stories, but I think there's ways to give fun hints to your readers without, like, handing us everything and then being surprised when we're not excited by the second book. I deal with this actually in a lot of standalone books too, in epilogues, and I'm kind of walking back on one of my earlier points where I love seeing characters continue to, like, learn and grow book to book, but there is definitely something about the series and the ones that we've read where I guess I get uncomfortable sometimes with, like, the pre-prescribed domesticity of some of these relationships. Like, a lot of them, you know, as much as I do love to see that wedding in book two, I don't need to see, you know, I don't need my main characters to get married. I don't need them to be pregnant by book three. And I think there's something deeper there that I need to unpack about queerness and, like, queer relationships can take on, you know, by nature of being queer, we're not prescribing to patriarchy and to, like, a heteropatriarchy, so we can allow our characters to have different journeys in life besides that type of domesticity. And I just don't see that very much in a series. Like, and I need to unpack that more.
I think that's really helpful to hear. I'm thinking about a series we both hold really close.
Mm-hmm.
That every character is married by the end of it, now that you say it.
Yeah.
And I happen to be, like, usually the married woman in the room, but, like, there are definitely couples that are been together exponentially longer than me, and that's just not the path, like, that they're taking with their relationship. But yeah, there is this end goal, and I wonder, as you're saying that, sorry, I'm unpacking this with you live, and we don't have notes about this, but I'm really sitting in, if it's a romantic story and the romantic thing is to be together and to, like, never have any other love other than this one, does it then mean that you have to show signs of that love in some way? You would think somewhere in this series, like, one of those couples would be in therapy because they've got some stuff to work through together. I'm saying this as a person who, like, goes to therapy. Like,
or even, like, I know a fair number of queer couples who have been together for, like, 10 or 20, you know, 10 or 15 years, who get married, you know, and they don't have big weddings. They do, like, city hall or something like that. And it's, the fact that they're not married or don't have children, or they're not, you know, they're not living that type of life, doesn't take away from the romance and from the relationship. So I do wonder about that, because I'm certainly not a person who wants my romances to be, like, the grittiest, most real to life thing. Like, you know, I'm here for a little bit of the fantasy, but not everyone's fantasy is that. And I would love to see sort of romance that explores, like, what different types of, like, long-term queer relationships can look like and can be.
Yeah, you have me sitting in this so deep now. I'm going to be thinking about this all night, because I read a lot of the action adventure series that I would put, like, there's romantic narratives in them, right? But they themselves are not books I would write as romance. I'm thinking a lot of Jerry Hill, Carolyn Elizabeth series. But I think there's a different permission when a book has queer characters who continue through the books who are doing a different objective besides falling in love.
Yeah.
Because then, like, the relationships are messy. I mentioned Lenski earlier, and the Don't Call Me Hero series is definitely that. I'm thinking a lot, even, you know, with certain erotica novels where it's not about the love as much as, like, the world in which these queer individuals exist and participate in. And it's about the politics usually surrounding them, because sex inherently is political mm-hmm. within the culture you and I were born into. So, yeah, the romance thing, it's, you would have thought that would have hit me by now. But nope, things can't hit me now. But, yeah, what do we do with that, you know? And I think in TV we don't get that because it's boring, right? You have to have somebody break up during sweeps week. You have to have somebody cheat in the season finale. You yada, 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 because they're just hitting the benchmarks, you know? And I'm selfishly sitting in that because, you know, I don't think my family always knows what to do with me because I am not hitting what most people consider the next benchmark, which is trying to start a family in some way. And so it's like, well, what are you doing next if you're not doing this? Like, what is your next, mm-hmm. what's the next thing that we like hold you up to reaching, you know? And I'm not buying a house anytime soon because I'm a millennial and, you know, these things are happening. So yeah, I'm thinking about what you and I are talking about off air a lot, and it's sitting with me heavy because I don't know if that's maybe one reason, like, getting into,
it's something that I think a lot about all the time. And, you know, you're listening to us unpack this together. I've never really thought about this before when thinking about these books, and it's definitely why I love my like Ice Queen power business women stories so much, because if it is part of a series, their happily ever afters throughout the series tends to be like they just continue to kill it in business together, and like they wear really great outfits, and like, you know, it's not them like planning their wedding or dealing with trying to propose to someone, or, you know, one of them is pregnant. Yeah.
Well, I was about to say, but one of those things you just mentioned does happen. How do you feel? It's not a series. Let's qualify for ourselves. Okay. Is there a difference between a series, which is like a united idea of like a community or a thought, like a profession that continues through multiple things, often with the same character, and a book that has a sequel? So I'm thinking, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call Lucy Dreamer's historical romance, which is amazing, go check out Heart of Gold, a series, it's a sequel. Like, it's book two. So if it's book two and not like the second.
I think the definitions of all of this is really porous. Like, everything, it changes. If you ask me today, my answer will be different from yesterday. I'm thinking of a new release of Alexandra Balfour's Written in the Stars, which the, I guess, sequel or like cinematic universe Hang the Moon just came out this month. I don't know that I would yet call that. I don't think those are being billed as a series, but they're definitely, it's a sequel or a companion to that book, but it's not the same. We are getting, well, maybe I picked a bad example, but I'm thinking, okay, the series that you mentioned, one of the first ones mm-hmm. that I read that I texted you about was Melissa Braden's Seven Shores. And that's one that, like, you can tell it was pitched, purchased, and conceived of as a complete series. Whereas I think that's different than someone who creates a universe of three books that are, it feels different to me. And I don't know if that's just like my brain trying to do that work or.
Yeah. So I'll use Seven Shores. Seven Shores The unifying thing in Seven Shores was the apartment complex that all of these women lived in.
Yeah.
So they had multiple different professions. You know, we get the amazing, okay, I'm biased. Autumn's my favorite book. But we get, you know, the barista narrative. You have the Hollywood narrative of book one, Autumn's narrative in book two, the surfing narrative, and like one of the scariest near-death scenes I've ever read in a romance in book three. And then you have Hadley and the fashion in book four. I think those are all correct. It's been, honestly, I can now say years since I have read them. But all of that happens, but the unifying thing is the apartment complex. And then you have, like, you know, to pick another big name, you have Georgia Beers, who does the Puppy Love series, and it's all about the kennel or the adoption facility for strays and such. So there's like a unifying thing that draws them all together. In the Mismatch series, those go through starting with, you know, the actual matching agent, and then goes into clients. So like there's a unified thing. Mm-hmm. I guess in the Bellflower books, the unifying thing is like the immediate community. Yeah. Is that immediate group of friends? But it's the idea of like I wouldn't put Seattle as like the unifying spot because they are participants within Seattle.
And I don't think that either of those books, Hang the Moon is definitely the follow-up to Written in the Stars, but I definitely think that it's very purposefully being marketed. If you look at like the website and the press around that book, it's still marketed as like a standalone book. You can jump right into it.
From what I'm almost done with it. Like you, I'm reading three or four things at a time. Mm-hmm. I feel that there are like jokes you may miss or like insights you may miss had you not read Written in the Stars, but you can ring Hang the Moon without ruining anything from Written in the Stars because Written in the Stars is a romance and you're going to assume anyway that those two get together. Spoiler alert. You know, I guess I should have said that before I told you, hey, these two get together. So, I'm and also like supplements aren't necessarily series. Yeah. Like I'm thinking of The Brutal Lie, which is in After Happily Ever After, the short story collection from, I always say it wrong, Ylva, but that's not correct, which is an addition to The Brutal Truth. But there is now like The Awkward Truth, I think it's coming out soon, which is Felicity's story. And so excited for that. Ridley Winters could, you know, like graffiti on a bathroom wall and I'd probably travel to go read it. So like, it's not a big secret. And then you have, you know, a lot of authors who like have short story continuations of characters you've seen, but that's still not the same as a series. As you mentioned with Bellflower and the amount of, I don't want to say like press navigation, but Bellflower having to remind everybody to stop by erasure, right? I do want to take part of that narrative and spin off of, have you ever read a book that has queer characters and notifiable like queer characters based on their pairing of the genders that people identify as in that way? Our community is super broad and it's not that easy to describe, but let's say like women falling for women, right? And then you know that there is another book with somebody who identifies as male, somebody who identifies as female. And as far as you know, within those two characters, they have never identified their sexual orientation outside of heterosexual. Again, Bellflower's characters are bisexual. Do not erase them. But like, I'm thinking of a particular author, but I want to give you room to do it because I know you just like completely fan gendered out about this newest book. But have you jumped ship when you've read a book in a series that focused on two queer characters and then other books did not focus on queer characters?
If by jump ship you mean, what do you mean?
You intentionally seek out non-queer narrative to stay in a series.
Okay. So it depends. So I think the example that I think you're thinking of is Alyssa Cole's Reluctant Royals series. Mm-hmm. So we on this podcast talked about Once Ghosted, Twice Shy, which is a novella, like a little companion in the Reluctant Royals series. And I have gone through and read the other books in that series, even though the romances were a man and a woman. And it was, you know, a story of sort of that type of romance. Yeah, I have done that. I've even there, I've even jumped from, there are some authors that we read who do series or sort of universes that are queer or like female and female romance. And then they have another series that's unrelated that is sort of more straight presenting. And I will sometimes even jump to a whole new series if I like the author that much and if the writing is that good. Yeah, I'll do that. But I've also, there have been things where, you know, there's one book or one companion piece that is queer and nothing else is. And sometimes that's all I read, selfishly. What about you?
I definitely have. And also MM, we talked about Casey Littleton's Scout and the Lavender Girl. Mm-hmm. Casey Littleton also writes a lot of MM. So I've, you know, consumed a couple of those novels as well. Which is still queer. Like I'm saying it like, you know, in addition to, I think we live in this space where you and I speak quite a bit before we record about like when we're picking a topic about how to honor the topic that we've chosen to discuss, which is WLW/lesfic. And I always lead with WLW because not everybody is a lesbian in these books, but also like, inherently, these books being queer means the community is much bigger than even female-identified people. So how do we honor the subject that people come for while also not negating any other character's voice or author's voice in the process? And as you can tell on the podcast, I'm super awkward about it because my intention is to always be inclusive, but I'm constantly learning the language myself. Like, I only know my own narrative, my own truth, my own pronouns, and I'm having to make sure that I keep up and learn. So, and people in the past who've reached out and helped me, thank you so much. I understand that your time is a gift, and I'm really respectful of that. I feel that way about the books too. I feel I'm responsible as a reader, even though we do this, to make sure that if an author is telling a story that these characters belong to not let the sexual identification of the characters, the orientation, the, you know, any of that prevent me from doing it, because I really want people who read cisgender heterosexual romance to also read the queer novella, to also read the queer, you know, most recent book. And if I don't read those books, then how else can I sit down with another reader and expect them to do the same? So I think it's, you know, showing up when authors put in that type of work. I don't feel obligated to read like really toxic straight people when they write queer characters, but we don't really read and talk about that anyway. Like if you're trying to make a quick queer buck, I'm not the queer buck you're going to make it off of. I like really respect authors who make these worlds really encapsulating. So that was long-winded, but then it makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think I agree with you. I also like, I think a talented writer, I definitely, when I first joined this world, when I first started reading these books, I definitely was just seeking out the WLW, the queer romances, and I really was actively ignoring romances that are present as like cis and straight, and I do sometimes still get in that mood where I, you know, sometimes that's just not the story that I want because I just don't care about men that much. But I hear you, and I think for me that's sort of the beauty of reading a series. The writers where I do read their sort of like more straight presenting romances, I read them because I trust the author, I trust the world that they've built, and I believe, like, I enjoy and believe in the writing itself, and that supersedes to me everything else. So
have you ever read a series out of order?
Yes.
Yeah, are you comfortable saying which?
Well, again, The Coal, because I read The Coal first. which is like in the middle, and went back. Once I figure out it's a series, I do like to follow the order. I'm not a person who normally is concerned with the intention. If I'm consuming an art object or literature or something, like, to me, what's sometimes the most important or is supersedes everything for me is like what I get out of it as a reader. But with a series, I will say like, okay, I think the author intends for the story to unfold this way, so I will follow the unfolding of the story the way that they want it to. Have you ever read out of order?
Oh yeah, multiple times, and twice, like two big series I've read, both of them started on book two because somehow I just missed that they were really a series and started at book two. I definitely read the second book in the Rivers Community book series by Radcliffe first. Oops, but Abby remains a favorite. And with the Soho Loft series, I don't know how. It was one of the first ones I encountered, but I ended up with Just Three Words first and then jumped to the next one with Mallory's story because I'm like, well, I know what happens anyway. And then read Brooklyn's story last. And Brooklyn's is my favorite. I like Kiss the Girl. Like, I really enjoy that book. Love that book. It would be safe to say that. But it was the first book, and I read it third in the series because I was just all out of order to begin with.
No, once I figure out something as a series, I really have to start at the beginning because, you know, I want that, which is really funny. I thought of one more thing that kicks me out of a series that I meant to say earlier, but it's short. It won't.
Please do.
Have this. There are certain series, there are certain writers where you're reading them and you're in like book three and you realize, oh, you only know how to describe sex in this one way. And you're writing four books and each book has multiple sex scenes. So I'm getting the same three sex scenes four different ways. I'm thinking of one series in particular. I won't say the name. Where every book had a formula where it was like the first, there was face sitting, one finger bang, and then they fell asleep. And that like every single time in some pretty improbable circumstances.
The first person to email Caitlin the correct book series, I will personally send you like a gift card for you to get your next book. Like, this should be fun. Can you figure it out from her description? Since you brought up sex, and I thought we were going to go most of the episode without making it there. So yay, kudos to you. You were the reason that people stop and rewind. So yay, I'm so thankful for you. Thanks for those analytics. In reading a series and being familiar with the characters, and as you said, you get kicked out when the sex scene is the same. How important is it to you that the sex, if it's like, is it like a bell curve? Like book one can be whatever, book two, three, whatever, better be heightened. And then like for the wrap up, it's okay if it's down. Or like, do the sex scenes need a steadily increase to like show you that will you be bothered if the sex isn't as exciting in a sequel, a threequel, whatever, going forward versus book one?
That is hard because I want to say no, it doesn't matter, but...
Is it hard? Hard's the word you were going to pick? Okay, Caitlin.
I have a beloved series where the sex in the first book is, in my eyes, like leaps and bounds more interesting than the sex in the second book. But that's okay because the issue, you know, the stuff that the characters were working through that sex was a lot different in the first book and the second book. But I mean, for me, truly.
Anybody who's listening to the podcast is going to know what you're talking about, but keep going.
I don't think the author is listening though. And that's
no, what I don't matters. Either. Do you have hopes in book three that it will return to the levels of sex that were in book one?
Well, I mean, let's not, book two was still plenty sexy. It's just, you know, but yeah, it would be nice if book three could be like a good combination of all of that.
All right. So this is fair too. Like, this is fair. working off of this thing that we're currently talking about, mm-hmm. sex included in this question.
Mm-hmm.
Every series you read now going forward, is it under a different microscope because you don't have like that initial, oh my God, this is so new and look at these people in this community and this continuation narrative. And now it's, when you read series, you have a whole bunch of stuff to compare that series to. It doesn't get the naive full ingestion that you definitely get the early stuff that you read. Like, I have stuff I definitely love, but if I was to read it now and have it against the microscope of other stuff, I'm not sure I would hold it as tight. Do you experience that with new series going out? Are they easier or harder for you to read? See, I used harder too. Quit focusing. There you go.
I mean, it's a common word.
There you go.
I don't know. I think the handful of stuff that I read right off the bat when I was discovering lesbic, discovering WLW, like romance, and realizing that people were writing these types of series, it was really formative. And so I do hold those kind of, they're kind of untouchable as far as like, I have critiques of them, but you know, not to the extent that I do other things. I think you're pointing to something. I do go into stuff a lot more critically now that I'm more familiar with the genre. And especially if it's an author where I've read, you know, if it's an author who I've read a series by them before, I'm much more critical because I know both the pitfalls that I've felt with the first series or the triumphs that this author has sort of reached. And that may be unfair because each thing is its own object, but you know, there's something to be said for getting to really sink into the writing of one author for like four books in a row, the way mm-hmm. that you do with a series and what that means and like how that changes your consumption of the work.
I agree. I'm a little sad that at this point in my reading experience, a lot of the stuff that are series or books, I now have to wait for the next installment versus that opportunity where you can, you know, in the beginning or after something, when you discover something you were unfamiliar with that's been out for a minute, you can just go book to book to book.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a different type of forgiveness and consumption when it's that quickly versus, you know, you read it and then decide if you're going to reread it before the next one comes out and things like that.
That's a really good point.
So I guess as we're wrapping up here, can you name any series that are currently on your bookshelf to be read or that you've recently read or that you're looking forward to? I know you mentioned the Cole book, which you've been waiting months for. And
yeah,
I had those 1 a.m. text messages that I adore so much. So,
yeah, I mean, I do, but I don't want to say what they like. I want to like dwell in the series that I'm kind of with right now. I think for me, so much of the experience of reading a series is getting to really dwell in them. And there's some that I'm kind of selfishly holding to myself. But of course, you know, Anna Burke, you come at me with the third Seal Cove book sooner rather than later. Thank you. Just the Anna Burke fangirl over here. What about you? Is there stuff that you're really like vibing with right now?
I recently had a long date with like a hammock and was going through and rereading Casey Luck's Darkness trilogy, which I had visited early in my reading experience, but definitely didn't give the time or the appreciation that I really should have. It's not a series. Well, it's not a series. I'm reading that, like, I'm looking forward to, like, really diving into Not Guilty by Britt Ryder, which is the Shameless follow-up. But again, it's the narrative from the other perspective, so I wouldn't put it in a series, but it's where all this language gets, you know, complicated. And then this summer, I'm gonna finally do it. And Gideon and Harrow, like, I'm gonna dive in, and you know, Tasman Mer, I'm gonna finally, you know, be a good queer and read the first two books in this series in full. So yeah, I'm still reading quite a bit. I realize when I say I'm not reading much, comparatively speaking, since I'm only responsible for myself and my relationship and my job, but not other like little people or family members or things like that. I do get a lot more reading in than some people, but my like deep saturate and, you know, introvert at its extreme is, you know, it's getting warmer. I'm leaving the house. I'm not reading as much as I do during the darker months and the colder months. So what are you up to in the greater world that isn't a reading device or a book?
I blame your wife for this one. I re-downloaded The Sims.
She's playing right now.
It's like my last gasp of, I don't know. I re-downloaded The Sims, and I guess I needed it. It's been cold and rainy, and I haven't wanted to leave the house, and I'm, you know, grappling with, like, being more outgoing, you know, like going out more and stuff opening up again, and then having my little freak out about that and staying home for a weekend. So yeah. And reading, I mean, I am reading a lot, which we are always reading a fair bit, but I've been really loving like nonfiction and delving into some like queer theory and history, which, you know, is my jam. So I'm keeping busy. How about you?
I am finishing up listening to Malcolm Gladwell's newest book. If anybody has read about the bomber mafia or consumed this book, I need somebody to talk to. This is the most random place to ask for somebody who's done that, but just yeah. In case. Also, for me, this is hiking season, you know, when it's not rainy and dangerous. So I'm getting a lot of miles under my feet. If anybody has courses or hiking that can be done in the greater New England area that you definitely recommend I see, particularly in the next 6 to 8 weeks, I really appreciate any insight that you have about that. I plan on spending the end of the month in Acadia National Park, which will be my third or fourth national park of the big ones, and I'm stoked to do that. So yeah, that's what's going on here. Caitlin, if people are looking for you, how can they talk to you and make that guess? I'm serious. I will send anybody who guesses which author Caitlin was not talking about, but talking about continuous sex scenes, a gift card to whichever publisher they want to get their next read. So Caitlin, it's up to you to tell me. Now I probably just spammed your inbox. Where do they find you, and where do they send their guesses?
Sure. You can find me on Same Sex in the City on Instagram, or at Same Sex the City on Twitter. You can find the podcast on Instagram at A Tip of the Tongue, or on Twitter at ATTTpod. Rebecca, where can people find you?
I'm at Rebecca Writes a Romance on Instagram, or Rebecca ATTTpod on Twitter. Twitter is the fastest way to reach me. I also realized in saying to people that if they send you these messages, you may be forewarned of every other trilogy that does this or quatrain or whatever. So yeah, anyway, this will be fun. I'm expecting you to tell me if somebody actually gets it and let me know who. So yeah. Yay for that. We did hit record this time, so I'm going to hit stop recording this time. Happy Pride, y'all. Look out for stuff coming up. As we've made an announcement this week, our next episode will be sharing Celeste Castro's interview with you. We can't wait to do that. So, yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Pride, where you can be completely sober and just inevitably forget how to walk, how to make it to the next step, and how to do anything. You've done at least 3 dozen times before.
Well, doing labor is homophobic, so.
And that's what we end on.